This is a Discovery Channel podcast.
In the Alaskan wilderness, a father and son set out on a trip of a lifetime. Then, disaster strikes. Swept under an ice shelf, they fight for their lives in the freezing water. They finally struggle ashore, but they're not out of trouble. They have no food or shelter and are at the mercy of prowling predators. The son faces a terrible dilemma. Stay with his 65-year-old father and wait for a rescue that may never come. Or leave him and hike 60 miles through dangerous terrain to find help. What it takes to survive on I Shouldn't Be Alive. The gates of the Arctic National Park is more than 13,000 square miles of almost uninhabited wilderness. This spectacular landscape draws in thousands of hardcore hikers and rafters from across the globe. A light plane has dropped Blake Stanfield and his father Neil in one of the park's remotest spots, 60 miles from the nearest settlement. The men share a lifelong love of the outdoors, and Blake has planned a trip for his father to mark a very special occasion.
For my father's 65th birthday, I had planned this rafting trip to the gates of the Arctic as a present to him.
Blake and I are good friends. We talk every day and share our experiences. He's always been a good kid.
My father and I started backpacking when I was a young boy. I always ended up loving that. He taught me to appreciate the outdoors.
With no radio or cell phone, they are cut off from the outside world. But as experienced outdoorsmen, relying on no one but themselves is all part of the adventure, and they came well prepared.
Where in the world did I put that lighter?
I got it.
Almost anywhere in Alaska, you're going to run into many different types of wildlife.
The reserve is rich in wildlife, including moose and caribou. It's virtually an untouched wilderness, home to hundreds of black bears and grizzlies, not to mention the roaming packs of wolves. Although Neil's been looking forward to the trip, he knows it'll be tough. He'd really wanted Blake to book them on an organized group trip, but Blake had other ideas.
Blake is very independently minded and decided that, oh no, we don't want to do that. We want to be able to do whatever we want to do.
I had never wanted to, and still never want to go on a guided tour.
Let's load her up.
It was, an experience that I wanted to have with my father, just the two of us.
Blake's itinerary has them traveling 90 miles by raft south down the Koyukuk River to the town of Bettles. It should take them around 6 days.
It was about a 90-mile float that we had planned, just camping and doing little short day hikes. We were just going to have fun.
It's early June and 2 full weeks before the vacation season gets into gear, so Blake and Neil have the Koyukuk all to themselves.
We commented on the way down the river that it wasn't it great to be the only ones on the river, the first ones on the river that year, and there was a reason, as it turned out.
For 8 months of the year, the rivers are choked with ice. Snow up to 6 feet thick covers the reserve. But come summer, this all melts, swelling the rivers with billions of gallons of water. But it's early in the season, and Blake and Neil soon spot some patches of ice that have yet to thaw.
The longer we floated, the more ice we actually started to encounter.
Now the current's picking up speed too, and Blake struggles to control the raft.
Do you think we ought to stop this thing?
I kept trying to look around the corner, hoping to find, which way we were going to be going. And that's when I realized that actually we didn't have a choice where we were going.
Totally out of control, the men are being dragged by the current.
We're going to have to pull in and stop this.
I can't slow it down, though.
We're going too fast, Blake.
Slow it down, Dad.
Hold on.
It was sheer panic at the time, and it happened so quickly, there wasn't much time at all to think. The next thing I actually remember was being pulled right underneath the ice.
There was so little time to realize what had happened, except that it was a real problem.
It wasn't long before we came up in essentially an air chamber underneath the ice.
The air pocket saves their lives, but the ice shelf could stretch on for miles.
I remember yelling at my father.
Blake yelled, "I'm sorry, Dad."
"Dad, I'm sorry."
Of course, it wasn't his fault.
"Give a hand."
Blake manages to grab Neil's hand, tries desperately to keep hold of him, but the current's too strong. He can only watch, helpless, as his dad is swept away beneath the ice.
"Dad!"
Blake soon follows. Then Neil and Blake are shot out from under the ice shelf, but their ordeal isn't over yet.
We were being carried rapidly towards the second ice shelf. I saw it coming. I reached up and grabbed it to try to prevent from going under it. The force of the river was such that I was carried underneath.
This one has no life-saving pocket of air.
And the second ice shelf had no room to breathe. So it was a function of holding your nose and thinking that this may be it.
My father and I both ended up with a lot of abrasions to the top of our heads. I've never thought of a worse way of dying than drowning, and was certainly thinking that that is how I was going to die. All I remember is after being under that water for what seemed like an eternity, I just remember popping out and taking in a nice big breath of air.
Blake survived being trapped under the ice, but there's no sign of his dad.
At this time, I had no idea where my father was. If he had been pushed up against something and trapped, I don't know how I would have been able to face my mother and the rest of my family, letting them know that my father had perished, you know, when I had made it. And the next thing I remember seeing was his head above the water.
He's alive, but the powerful current is sweeping him away.
It didn't appear like he was making any attempt to get out of the river, and for all I knew, he was injured and couldn't.
Neil's exhausted, but somehow manages to catch hold of a rock and hauls himself out.
Dad, you're gonna freeze!
Blake knows that his dad has got to get to shore fast before he's paralyzed by the cold and shock.
Dad, you better swim!
And Blake, in the meantime, is yelling at me, and I can't hear above the roar of the river. So eventually, I manage to get my breath long enough to tell him to shut up.
Will you let me speak for a minute?
Blake was telling me that I had to swim over to him, which was the last thing in the world I wanted to do.
Neil dreads the thought of braving the freezing current again.
Come on, Dad! You can do it!
Gathering his courage, he plunges in.
You can do it, Dad! Dad!
Neil makes it, but he's not out of danger yet.
Oh my God, you're freezing. Dad, come here.
I'm so sorry, Dad.
It's okay. It was just bad luck.
The icy water has sucked the life out of Neil. Blake's a doctor, and he can see his father is in the first stages of hypothermia.
The second I got him out, I realized he was shaking uncontrollably. It was mild seizure-like.
Neil's 65-year-old body can't cope with the cold as well as his son's. In a younger person, veins contract in the arms and legs, reducing heat loss and helping to maintain the body's critical core temperature. But Neil's older veins don't contract as efficiently. Life-saving heat is flooding out of his body more rapidly. If he doesn't warm up soon, his organs will stop working and he will die from hypothermia.
Warm you up, Dad. We gotta warm you up.
Blake's desperate. He has to get his dad warm fast. Then he remembers something.
Where in the world did I put that lighter?
I got it.
By a miracle, the lighter didn't get washed away, but it's soaked. If it doesn't light, it could spell a death sentence for Neil.
When I pulled that lighter out of my pocket and hit the button, the very first time that torch lit up, and maybe we were going to be able to have a fire.
But Neil's wet clothes are rapidly draining vital heat from his body.
I knew that we had to get a fire started, and we had to get him out of those cold, wet clothes.
We gotta get you drying. It's okay, Dad. You're going to be okay.
Basically, while this fire got started, I hugged him and tried to give him some of the warmth that I had.
Okay.
Eventually got him to where he wasn't shaking anymore.
The immediate crisis is over. Now Blake realizes just how close he and his father came to dying.
Blake had in his life vest a picture of his wife and son, and been so worried about ever seeing them again. We were both somewhat crying.
But it's far from all right. They're in the middle of nowhere, and no one expects them back for about a week. Their raft is gone, along with all their food and gear. Worse still, they know the reserve is teeming with hundreds of wolves and bears.
I think at that point we realized that we got some big problems.
All their camping gear is gone, leaving them without protection from the weather in an Alaskan wilderness. And with no other rafters likely to brave the river this early in the season, Blake knows that their chances of being rescued are bleak.
Here we were in the middle of this vast wilderness, a good 60 miles from the nearest human being. No one was expected to be flown into the area for at least 2 weeks after our trip. We were alone, and we were going to have to endure or survive until either we found a way out of it or someone came looking for us.
They decide to stay put and build a shelter to protect them from the weather. The risk of rain is the least of their problems.
Hey, Blake, come take a look at this.
What?
Tracks. What do you think?
Black bear?
More like a grizzly to me.
Grizzlies can be fierce and aggressive, and the reserve is home to hundreds of them. They usually prey on caribou and sheep, but a hungry grizzly can attack and kill humans.
I'm gonna get that fire started.
The men had a shotgun, but that's at the bottom of the river now. With night falling, their only defense against prowling grizzlies is fire.
My father and I took turns laying towards the front of the shelter where the fire was, and then whoever was laying in back would bear hug the person in front.
Neil and Blake are hungry, cold, and tired, but sleeping won't be easy. During the summer, the tilt of the Earth's orbit keeps the North Pole facing towards the sun, so it barely dips below the horizon. In Alaska, this makes for almost perpetual daylight, with only 3 hours of real darkness. But during that time, the temperature can drop to as low as 40 degrees.
I shivered myself to sleep, because sure my clothes were still damp.
But Blake is too worried to sleep. It will be at least a week before anyone realizes they're even missing, and his dad might not survive that long. The only alternative is a grueling 60-mile hike to the nearest town.
It was a long way to the nearest person. It was extremely rough terrain. We only had one set of shoes between the two of us. There were plenty of bears in the area. It was hard to take in the severity of the predicament that we were in.
By the next morning, Blake's made a decision.
Well, I needed to get back to Bettles. I needed to go find help.
Now he needs to convince his dad it's the right one.
Dad, you okay?
Yeah. Very sore, though. You slept?
Not so much, no.
You know, I've been thinking, we gotta get ourselves organized. We gotta build up a nice big pile of firewood, maybe make some traps. We're gonna need some food.
I'm going for help, Dad.
Help? From where?
Blake had no doubt given it a lot of thought and decided that he could conquer this problem and hike back to Bettles.
Bettles is 60 miles away. This is just plain crazy. Look, we talked about this. First rule of survival, stick together.
Dad, I know all that, but no one else is gonna be coming down the river for weeks. We can't wait that long.
You trying to get yourself killed? Have you even looked at the map? There's a darn great river in the way.
I'd ask him how in the world he was gonna get over the Tingayuk River to our south, which appeared to be a pretty good sized river, and he said, I don't know, I'll find a way.
Yeah, how? This isn't some little stream. This is an Alaskan river in full flow. Now, do you have any idea how powerful that is?
Yes, Dad, I was in one yesterday, remember?
We're on our own, Dad. No one's coming, no one.
I'm telling you not to go.
Leaving him alone was a hard decision, but I think he knew I was stubborn because I inherited that from him.
You're really going, aren't you?
Yes, sir, I am. I'm really going. Because if I don't, we're going to die here, Dad.
You're going to need the knife and the lighter. Now, what about the bears? You saw all those tracks.
Well, you got the fire. That should keep them away.
I meant you, son. What about the bears?
I love you, Dad.
We hugged and told each other we loved each other.
Yeah, me too. Well, you know I do.
Father and son know this is no ordinary goodbye. It could be the last time they ever see each other.
Now, don't get yourself killed, you hear?
I was emotional when he left. I felt alone and very concerned about being alone, but probably more worried about him and what he might encounter.
Ahead of Blake is a 60-mile hike south to the nearest town, over the toughest terrain he's ever experienced. He has no food or warm clothing. If he gets injured in any way, he doesn't stand a chance. In his path stands the Tinyaguk River, which he hopes won't be too wide to cross. But first, he has to get there. The hiking is taking it out of Blake. The ground is rough and uneven, and he hasn't eaten for over 24 hours. But Blake is making good progress. Just a few hours after leaving his father, he hits the river, the biggest obstacle between him and Bettles. It's freezing cold and fast running. He could be dragged under another ice shelf. Blake has no choice. If he's going to reach help for him and his dad, he's just going to have to cross it.
As soon as I started to cross, the water was flowing fast enough that I realized I was just going to have to jump and swim over to the other side.
Blake uses all his strength to fight the racing current. The icy water cuts into him like knives. Somehow, he makes it across. It's taken everything he's got. It's a huge achievement. With the Tinyugook behind him, it should be a straightforward hike to Bettles. Miles away, Blake's 65-year-old father, Neil, is hungry and tired, but he can't rest. He's given their only lighter to Blake, and he's got to keep the fire from going out. It's his only source of warmth and his sole defense against bears.
The difficulty of keeping the fire going was essentially being able to walk on, with only stocking foot waders on really rocky soil.
Neil hopes the fire will be enough to keep the bears and wolves at bay, but he also shouts and hollers to discourage an attack. Neil has seen no signs of bears yet. What really preys on his mind is what could be happening to his son.
I was very worried about Blake and what he might have run into.
Like his dad, Blake is also trying to frighten predators away by singing aloud. And ironically, his song list is apropos.
Most of my songs were moose tunes and bear tunes, actually.
But his upbeat mood doesn't last long. Blake comes face to face with his worst nightmare, a grizzly bear.
A grizzly can tear you to bits, you know, with their powerful jaws, but their claws can rip holes through you like nobody's business, so you don't want to mess with them.
Blake can't let the bear see him, but even the slightest sound could attract its attention.
I certainly sent the adrenaline through my body when I saw him.
Blake doesn't dare make a sound. The bear is close, too close.
It was scary seeing him out there because he wasn't far enough away for my liking.
The bear hasn't spotted him, but grizzlies have a secret weapon. A grizzly's nasal passages are lined with billions of sensors. A human has just 12 million, making a grizzly's sense of smell about 7,000 times more powerful. A grizzly can pick up the scent of prey from more than 2 miles away. Blake's lucky. He's downwind of the bear, but the wind could change. It's a big risk, but he's got to make a run for it. Incredibly, he gets away without being spotted. It's a lucky escape, but he's still got a long way to go. Blake's exhausted, but making good ground. He's survived 2 Arctic rivers and a bear, but now his good fortune is about to run out. Blake can't believe his eyes. It's the Tinyugook River, the river Blake thought he'd crossed earlier that day. That river was a stream in comparison, and he barely made it across. If he tries to cross this one, he'll drown.
I kind of lost a lot of that optimism that I had as soon as I saw that there was no way to cross this thing because it was so wide and so swiftly moving and so cold.
It's a dead end. Now he's tormented by the thought of his dad alone in the wilderness, waiting for a rescue that will never come. Now the mental and physical exhaustion of the last 2 days finally catches up with him.
I realized I needed to rest. That was something my body was asking for at the time because it had been a long, long sludge.
The constant physical exertion means that Blake is burning energy about 24 times faster than normal. He hasn't eaten for 36 hours, and now his body, desperate for fuel, is converting muscle into energy. It is literally beginning to eat itself alive. Miles away, Neil is facing his first night alone in an Alaskan wilderness teeming with predators. But he knows sleeping is risky. All he has to keep bears and wolves at bay is his fire.
The difficulty of keeping the fire going was staying awake enough. I would wake up in the middle of the night, maybe have a problem and have to work to get her going again.
If the fire goes out, Neil is in big trouble. After a fitful night's sleep, Blake has to confront the bleak reality of his situation.
I was distraught when I realized that there's pretty much no way to get to Bettles. I was a long way from what I'd hoped to be my final destination.
He has just one slim hope, that if he stays by the river, a passing aircraft might just spot him.
I kept thinking about the fact that these bush pilots fly up and down these rivers, so they might be flying directly overhead.
He has to do everything he can to make himself more visible. Despite his weakened state, Blake starts to gather driftwood for a signal fire.
I actually set one of these log jams on fire, hoping that someone might see this smoke.
But even this simple plan goes wrong.
Every time I looked up into the sky, this smoke wasn't very white and smoky like you always see in the TV shows. You know, it wasn't that noticeable.
Feeling defeated, Blake beds down for his second night in the wilderness. Neil has so far managed to keep his fire burning, but what has until now been a lifesaver is about to put him in danger.
I guess a spark jumped from the fire. All of a sudden, there was a fire going on right above my head, and I'm talking like 18 inches above my head. So I had to get out of there fast.
Helpless, Neil watches as his precious shelter burns to the ground. After surviving for 3 days in the Alaskan wilderness, Neil's makeshift camp has been destroyed by a stray spark.
I got out of there and watched as the fire just burst into an inferno.
He has to wait for the blaze to die down, but then it hits him. He must save part of it to light a new fire. Without it, he'll freeze from the cold and have no protection from prowling predators. Neil saved his fire for now. With his camp destroyed, Neil is left exposed to the elements. Now daybreak brings a new enemy, the blazing sun.
The sun was coming down pretty hard, and there was essentially no cover.
He needs to build another shelter, but it's becoming harder and harder to carry out even simple tasks. There's only so much punishment a 65-year-old body can take. And after 3 days without food, Neil is weakening. Blake is still waiting. He's gambling that by staying by a huge river, he will increase his chances of being spotted by local pilots. But after 2 days, his optimism is fading.
I was definitely depressed about the situation that we were in, especially because I had so much time to think about it.
Blake endures another day and another night, his constant fear that his dad hasn't survived his ordeal. Another day passes with no sign of a plane. Then, Blake thinks he hears something.
Around 6 or 7 in the evening on Tuesday, I was laying over by my fire when I heard the sound of an airplane. And my God, he was coming up on me quick, I could tell.
Hey! Hey! Hey!
Blake is desperate for the pilot to see him.
Hey! 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 I realized that he spotted me. He'd spotted me.
The plane doesn't land, but Blake is convinced it's just gone for help. But 3 hours later, there's still no sign of rescue. Blake's weak and confused. Was his mind playing tricks on him?
Boy, after a while, I started thinking, did I just hallucinate? Did I imagine that plane?
But then, the plane reappears.
I'm here! Help!
It drops something. It's a bag containing supplies and a walkie-talkie.
I turned that radio on. I kind of told him what had happened.
There's only one thought on Blake's mind.
Please hurry. You gotta go find my dad. 50 miles upstream, there'll be a fire going. You'll see the fire.
The pilot launches an aerial search for Neil.
And Tango, where are you guys at?
Okay, we're gonna head north.
A plane reaches the right area within 10 minutes. Neil's camp should be easy to spot. But when the pilot reports back to Blake, the news is bad. There's no sign of his dad.
Hey, you gotta go back. He's up there. Keep going till you find him. He can't leave. He's gotta be at the camp. Maybe you didn't go far enough. He can't walk. He's gotta be there.
Here's something happened to my dad. Because there's no way he could miss him.
You gotta go and find my dad.
And I fell to my knees.
It's Blake's worst nightmare. He left his dad to survive on his own. Now he must live with the thought that something has happened to him. The aerial search continues. All Blake can do now is wait and pray.
We're just entering base, turn to final.
Hello, is anybody there? Can you hear me?
Finally, the pilot does see something, but he can't land. Blake is picked up by a chopper and rushed to the scene.
And Tango, you guys in?
Neil, you okay?
How did you know I was here?
I asked your son.
They climbed in the helicopter.
I'm so sorry, Dad. So sorry.
Hell, all I could say was, man, you look like hell.
Well, you don't look that cute yourself.
I was very happy to see him. Very, very happy.
Can we get the hell home now?
Let's get out of here.
And then we took off together again.
Neil and Blake lost 21 pounds between them during their five-day wilderness ordeal. After the accident, Blake moved his family back from Alaska to Oklahoma City to be closer to his parents. He now practices general medicine there, while Neil runs a business managing buildings. Blake and Neil still regularly go hiking together, but they have never gone rafting again.